They step into the biggest shows with the biggest names. And sometimes they get written on or off in a moment's notice. It's time to find out all the dramatic details of what it's like to be a guest star. With your host, Pete Ferrero.
Let's go.
Well, this is a real fun treat for me. We're talking here with on guest star with Alan Blumenfeld, and it's awesome, man, to see you. You know, when I think about guest star, you've done a lot of this.
I've been very lucky. Blumenfeld, I don't want to get too hairy about it.
No, thank you for correcting.
I've done a lot. In fact, I did a guest star on a show called A Single Guy, created by Brad Hall, who is a wonderful guy, and I was actually his teacher at Santa Maria in 1925, years ago, and in the 70s, 70s or 80s? I don't remember. I don't remember, 75, maybe 76.
It's been a minute.
And Brad said kindly, Alan Blumenfeld's here a guest starring because the show is not really considered on the air until Alan Blumenfeld guest stars on it.
That's
so it's very kind, and I'm lucky, and I consider myself fortunate.
I mean, man, and it's not just TV. We're talking films too. You're in some of the most iconic. We're going to talk about some of that. But I always like to start with this with, you know, and I think you started acting at a very young age. So where did this little acting bug come from with you?
You're so kind. Well, honestly, there's two sources. One was I went to a camp, a summer camp, as many Jews from Long Island did, Camp Starlight. And they had a fantastic theater program. There was a woman named June Rovinger, who wound up being a stage manager of some substance in New York City. Every group, the juniors, the interns, the plebes, and the seniors, did a show every year. And I did a play called The King Sneezes. I still have strong memories of the yellow chambray shirt that I wore at the time. Anyway, I did a musical every summer from the time I was 8. Marion Sam in Little Abner and Brigadoon, the mayor, and just a bunch. And I thought then, wow, this is just juicy and groovy. And then by the time I was in junior high, I knew this is what I want to do.
Yeah, I mean, and you, what is the process like for you at that time in that era to get into it? Did you find an agent first? What did you kind of do to navigate? Now you know you want to do this. What did you do?
Oh, nothing. My parents, who are lovely people, but you know, it never occurred to me that I would go take classes or something. At the time, we had in high school a woman named Sally Dietrich, who ran the Choraleers, and she did a musical every year. And when I was in 10th grade, she gave me a substantial role in The Boyfriend as Lord Brockhurst. Just a fantastic time. And then I played Fiorello in Fiorello and Mr. Bigley in How to Succeed in Business every year. And it just was so, oh my God, it was just so what I wanted to do. I just would live for that. I was doing some political work at the time against the war in Vietnam. And between that and my work, stage plays, I mean, it's once a year, but it was all I wanted to do. It wasn't until I went to college that I took acting classes. And I took classes at the college. And then I took a class in New York also at Sonia Moore's studio. She had studied with Vakhtangov, who she said was the traitor to Stanislavski. She wrote a book called The Stanislavski System, which is really quite excellent. Anyway, so it wasn't until I was really 18, 19, that I started studying in any formal way.
You were in New York at the time when you started, and I was from New Jersey, so we have...
Where in New Jersey?
Northern New Jersey, like where the Meadowlands is and Giants play and all that.
Yeah. I'm from Long Island, so...
Yeah, so we're same neck of the woods, sort of. But at some point, I'm sure you made a transition and said, I need to go to L.A., right? When was...
Oh, well, that's... I was in New York. I was on Long Island in high school and college. I stayed back east. After my third year in college, I went to Sarah Lawrence, which was a women's college, and went co-ed while I just before I got there, 3 years before I got there. My sister was living in California at the time, and she found this in Northern California. She found a program at the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco, a summer conservatory, a summer training congress. So I flew out there to visit her. I auditioned. I got accepted. So the summer of 73, I flew to San Francisco expecting to find LSD and, you know, the Grateful Dead and all that. And things had moved on quite a bit since the summer of love. Still, San Francisco was a transformative experience. And I trained there for 2 years. I met the woman who became my wife. We started dating then. You want all this? I went to Ashland, Oregon to the Shakespeare Festival. I went to Santa Maria to teach and act, which is where I met Brad Hall and a lot of other wonderful people, Roy Connolly, who's now an executive at Disney, and a lot of really great people. It was a tough time. And then back to ACT to get a master's degree, an MFA. We were the first year, 1978. Anna Deavere Smith was with us, 79 maybe. That the program folded and didn't come back till 1990. And I just was on a Zoom with them that the program is taking a hiatus until they can figure out what to do because it's just not working out. So that was transformative in San Francisco and learning to be I wanted to be a regional repertory actor, and that's what I studied to do. And then I got married, we had two little babies, I turned 30, and I thought, you know what? There's a whole antipathy between Los Angeles and San Francisco, which I'm sure you're aware of.
Sure.
Fuck LA, man. Fuck
right,
LA.
Right, right.
And, you know, San Francisco, you bet you would. So I thought, okay, I don't want to not go to LA because I'm scared. I don't want to look back and say, I should have gone, I would have gone. We had two little kids. New York was sort of out of the question, although
sure.
I keep wondering what life would have been had I gone. So in 1982, with two children under the age of three, we moved to Los Angeles. And I didn't work for 2 years, 2.5 years.
Wow.
Did some theater.
Welcome to LA.
Yeah, you know, it was just tough. I had to reimagine, and I reimagined by 84. I started getting some guest star work. My first job in television on Different Strokes, my agent negotiated a guest star billing. I didn't realize what that meant because I just kind of would get a job. They pay top of show, which, by the way, is a designation that the union has. We call it the top of show. The producers call it major role minimum. See how that. Right. So I started as a guest star. And I realized years later, so many of my friends who are brilliant, wonderful actors were struggling to get designated as a guest star because in our contracts, the money is tied to the billing. So you don't get the money of a guest star unless you get designated as a guest star. It's a complicated issue. But anyway, and I've been here since then, since 82, and raised a family, and I've had a great time.
I mean,
really lucky. Can I say that again? Really lucky.
Yeah, man.
I'm a good actor, but I'm lucky.
I mean, it's the luck and talent all working together at the same time, you know.
Very kind.
There's a bit of that, but I want to talk about the 80s sitcoms because they were really starting to we look at television now and there's so many streaming platforms and there's so many networks, but then if you were on a Different Strokes, especially as a guest star, I think that was a pretty big deal because a lot of households were watching Different Strokes. And it was a great show. I loved that show growing up. It's probably where I first saw you on.
How old are you?
I am 45. So, I mean, this is my era of television.
Well, that's why I ask how to situate you. My older son is 42. So you're in that cohort. But I agree. I didn't let you finish your question. I'm sorry.
No, but, you know, just on that, you were getting noticed. So when you come off of a Different Strokes, how does that change what you're doing as an actor, or does it change it at all?
It's up to my agent who I've been with since 84, Scott Manners. It was the Stone Manners. It was originally called, oh God. Oh, terrible. I apologize. I forgot. Tim Stone's original partner, I apologize for forgetting his name. I apologize to him. And then Scott became a partner, so Stone Manners. Now it's called Artists and Representatives. And I've been with Scott since then. Glenn Salner's, it's a magnificent office. they love actors. They promote actors. They have a New York office now, and their actors are all working, and they're on Broadway and on tour and are Tony winners. It's a high class office. So, you know, once you get to be a guest star, then you're in the guest star category, which means that my agent had to fight and work to get auditions and get me into more work. And as you pointed out, at that point, there's three networks. So there's, you know, the number of places where you can go is limited, but it also means the number of places is limited. Once you're in there, you can start going. It wasn't for another year or so that I really started to pump. The mid-80s, I mean, I did almost all of Embassy Television shows over there at Universal. I started doing the MTM shows, Mary Tyler Moore's company. And by the way, I've taken all those off my resume because now, you know, I'm 69 years old and you know, a lot of the casting directors and people that I work with, that anything before 2000, or some cases 2010, they're like, what? Which makes me sad because there was some great stuff. I mean, Norman Lear was revolutionary. I'm sorry I never got to do any of his shows. I guess the only one I did was a Baghdad Cafe, which I think he was peripherally involved with Whoopi Goldberg and Gene Stapleton. But other than that, I mean, you couldn't do an episode of Maude where she gets raped by the magnificent actor David Dukes and have comedy as well as, so.
You're right. Mm-hmm.
Then it was up to my agent to push me in. And he really started by the mid 80s. I was really very gratefully working regularly as a guest star on half hour television.
I want to ask you about Different Strokes because and we're going to go to other things, but we're here.
Please, not anything.
But when you're on Different Strokes, you come into the universe, you're, I don't want to say new, but you're just guest starring. You're new to guest starring. And that show, you know, all those actors, the kids are known to have had some troubles. I mean, it's not a secret. I'm not talking, but you know, what is that like walking into the universe of Different Strokes at that time? And then I guess to follow on that, when you hear that has happened to the kid actors, how do you feel about that? You know, given that you have a special relationship to that show being your first job as a guest star.
That's very insightful. So I'll say two things. First of all, I know some of the actors had some addiction problems, and addiction is a horrible disease and knows no age or socioeconomic category. So, you know, when you hear about an actor who's been struggling like that, especially a child actor, it's heartbreaking. My wife taught acting at the Mickey Rooney's Talentown USA in Azusa, California, everything from A to Z in the USA. Mickey, I think, only went there once. I think he just lent his name or licensed his name. I'm not sure what the arrangement was. But I watched her teaching a lot of young people. And, you know, it's a family business. You know, the kids are either earning money for their family, which is hard, or earning money for themselves, or somehow making up for a lack, or they just wanted to do it on their own. And then that's the best thing there is, a family that's supportive of a child's journey. I have to say, Gary Coleman was on dialysis twice a day when I was there. I only knew that because someone told me. He would leave and do dialysis and come back. He knew his lines, he knew his blocking. He was fantastically professional from my point of view. Conrad Bain, who was the dad, I mean, he was just a professional and a real pro with a huge resume and history. And the guys who ran the show, you know, when you're a guest star, it's like going to dinner at someone's house. They're a family, you show up. If everything's groovy and everyone's getting along, you can have a great time. If they had a fight before you showed up and there's kind of a cold pull that's, you know, and you sense it and you go, oh my God, get me the fuck out of here. But, you know, as a guest star, you either get invited in and everything's fine and someone's there to navigate with you, for you, or you go to your dressing room and just do your work and go home. I love television, especially now, as you pointed out, that's so fantastic. At the time, you know, television is fast. You audition, you know, right away. If you hate it, it'll be over soon. If you love it, hopefully there's another one coming along. So being a guest star, it's really, it's so dependent on, I mean, I don't want to skip ahead, so I'll leave it at that. Unless you want to talk about other shows.
Yeah, sure. I mean, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say The Golden Girls. So
oh, that's I was going to go there. So that's where we're on the same page. Yeah.
I just, you know, I did two episodes of The Golden Girls, and those women were just fantastic.
They're hilarious. Yeah. I mean,
hilarious.
And the first one, you come in as the plumber, right?
Yeah,
and
it's the plumber.
And you're right in the middle of them. You know what I mean?
Yes. Like, oh my God.
B, you know, B and Betty White and Estelle Getty. Like you're in the middle of this storyline with the with.
Yes, and then the other one I did was Mr. Ha Ha, which was a cultural wraparound show for B. Arthur's character's birthday. You know, those women are icons of comedy and of acting. We had seen Estelle Getty the year before I did the show in New York in the off-Broadway production of Harvey Fierstein's, you know, Matthew Broderick and Harvey and, terrible. I'm sorry that I forgot the name that eventually transferred. Anyway, we had seen her on stage and she was just spectacular. You know, so I always approached it, especially when I was younger, as who has a theater background and who's a film and television actor, because there's a difference in terms of the way you approach things. All those women from Golden Girls were theater background kids. I mean, even Betty White, you know, just such a multi-talented, what a you know, as the last one leaving. Just as a plug, so there's a Golden Girls convention called Thank You for Being a Fan, which takes place in April in Chicago. And someone on Facebook said, hey, Alan, did you hear about this? And I said, yeah, okay, whatever. Then my son, who's an attorney, he's 42, lives nearby, said, you know, you should check this out. So I thought, all right, two people saying it. Contacted my manager, long story short, they wanted me to come to this convention. And
it's amazing.
And amazing. Yeah. You know, and it's the money's great. And the time, it's all takes place at the LGBTQ center outside.
Even better. Yes.
Chicago. Absolutely. It's going to be amazing, and they want me to come in costume, so I'm going to have to scrounge up two costumes. I won't scrounge. I will pay to rent them because I want to honor the legacy. If you look at the writing on those shows,
it's incredible. I was saying that I rewatched them yesterday, and B. Arthur is so funny. Like they're all so funny. The delivery is incredible, but the writing of those of that show is just impeccable. It's really impeccable. Great. It's
spectacular. I mean, I know that Sandy Helberg and his wife Harriet wrote some. Mort Nathan and Barry Fusco, I know, wrote some. Terry Hughes, I believe, directed every single episode or almost everyone. Mm-hmm. So they had a machine in the best sense. They knew what they were doing. And again, being a guest star, you come in. The women had been doing it for a while, and they were very. They had stuff to do on their own.
Sure.
So I would hang out. And those who wanted to chat would chat, and otherwise you go to your dressing room and come back. But the tone was kind and friendly and inviting. That's what you want. That's what you hope for.
And we just lost Betty White not too long ago here. I mean, that must have been upsetting, man. You did a lot of stuff with her.
It was just so, yeah. I mean, I was hoping that maybe she'd be at the convention. I mean, she's 100 years old, so I don't know how well she travels there.
Sure.
But yeah, I was hoping against hope that I could get to meet her again because, you know, what a legend. What a legend and what a continually evolving, working actor who had to recreate herself and had the opportunity to do so. It's what, you know, you hope for that as an actor.
You're also in the pilot of Growing Pains, which is so wonderful. I mean, you're the patient, but they bring you back. You did two Growing Pains, right?
I did indeed.
Yeah.
Tell me about Growing Pains.
Yeah.
I believe it was...
I don't know if you're playing the same character. They don't really say, but
yes, it's the same character, for sure. I think John Pasquin directed that one. I'm not sure. He's a magnificent director. And again, from the theater, did all of Tim Allen's stuff on his first show and then on this new show. Growing Pains was fantastic. You know, it was the young kid, Jeremy, had studied with my wife at Mickey Rooney's Talentown USA and landed this job. Kirk was young. They were all young. Joanna Kearns, who I just thought was magnificent and directed me in a TV movie years later, you know, when you're part of a show that goes on like that, and you come in at the beginning and everyone's kind of excited and new, and then you come back a few years later and everyone's a little more like, hey, you know, car catalogs, you know, just because you go from hopeful to successful. And that's the journey that every actor hopes for, right?
So. Sure. But you've seen that on a bunch of shows where you've returned, yeah. Right? I'm curious what that experience is like for you when you see, you know, when you come in to in the beginning and then you come in a little bit later and, you know, now we're talking about the car or the new house.
Well, you know, right, because everyone now has, you know, is a little more relaxed, a little more, there's more stability. The greatest for me was Gary David Goldberg, Family Ties. I did, I think, 7 or 8 of them. He had what he called the Goldberg Players, a repertoire group of us. At the time, that was very unusual. The networks didn't like to have the same actors come back as a new character.
Sure.
I played a new character on every episode of Family Ties that I did. Sam Wiseman directed many, John Pasquin directed a few, Mimi Leader directed one, I think, I might be wrong about that. Gary David Goldberg, who is no longer with us, died a number of years ago. His daughter, Dana, I've not yet worked with her, a spectacular talent. Gary was one of the mentors in my life in terms of the writing, you know, the episodes he wrote. The first one I did, I think, was the second season. It was where Meredith Baxter's character performs as a folk singer. The second year, when I came back, a few years later, I came back for a show called, it was a funeral episode starring Barry. God, she's such a great actor. And there you have Gary doing what he did best, pathos and comedy. At the same time, there's a yard sale and I come in and then I get invited to the funeral or I invite myself to the funeral, but I learn about it, right? It's funny. You just laugh when you hear that. It's insane. Comedy, a friend of mine told me, a teacher years ago, the juxtaposition of opposites.
Totally.
Yeah. Right. Comedy creates the something that's out of perspective and it puts things in perspective, but it's that juxtaposition of opposites. You're having a garage sale and then you go to a funeral and the guy from the garage sale shows up at the funeral. My entrance got a laugh. You know, that was not me, although I'm a good actor. I'm a very good actor.
You do bring in a big entrance. So.
I do. And I learned that, you know. So that when you come back, you know, and I have to say Michael J. Fox, who I worked with a couple of times on that show, you know, he, again, was such a professional. So, you know, in half-hour television, the way they used to do it, you could get a new script every day. You get a new script between the afternoon taping and the evening taping. Mm. You know, for a guest star, it's okay. All right, I got 1 or 2 scenes. But for the regulars, man, they're humping. You know, they got to learn, you know, 20, 30 new pages. And watching Michael J. Fox, I have to say, he's young. He was the star of the show. He was so kind. Michael Gross, who's the dad, who's a great man and a wonderful actor, and Meredith Baxter. I mean, they were so kind and so welcoming. And I didn't notice the kind of debilitation of their personality over time. They just got more and more grateful. Another show that I experienced that on was Heroes, the original Heroes.
I love the original Heroes, man. The first season of the original Heroes is one of the best first seasons of any show that I've ever watched. It's just totally so, it's so good. It is so good.
And the writing.
Writing
is amazing. You know, Heroes, you know, every time I showed up, those guys were so grateful to be doing that kind of quality work. They had 3 crews sometimes working, you know, shooting at the same time. This is, you know, now in the era of Game of Thrones, that's, you have
sure.
to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All over the world. But at that time, and again, every time I showed up on that set, the actors were kind, friendly, grateful, happy to have the work. God, I love that. You know, I love to see that.
On Heroes, it's, you know, it's a much different universe than, say, the sitcom stuff that you had done earlier.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
magic and all this, you know, sci-fi stuff. How do you like adapting to that world as opposed to the sitcom stuff?
The most fun there is. I, you know, my career, such as it is, you know, the word career describes the flight of a hawk when you look back, you career from career to career, is that line from that song in the Follies. You know, the 80s, I did half hour, tons of half hour, loved it. Love that live interaction where the audience is laughing, where you get that theater hit immediately. The joke lands, boom, big laugh, learn to hold for the laugh and move on. It requires a lot of stage skill. And then in the 90s, I was lucky. I did a lot of hour shows, a lot of hour shows. That's when, I guess Heroes was 2000.
Yeah.
I went to New York and did a Broadway show in the mid 90s. When I came back, I picked up and kept doing hour television, which I love a lot. Hour television is like film, but on speed. You know, you got a, you know, like a table, a meal at a, in a film, around a table, you'd do a big shot and then you do twos and threes and singles. You could take 3 days shooting a dinner scene.
No studio audience either. This is just,
oh,
this
never.
Is, right. Yeah. Right.
Hour shows never. The biggest difference I noticed in the hour shows, which I loved, starting on Heroes from my experience and more maybe earlier, but the writers would be on the set, on the floor where when you're shooting. So the actor has access so that you could go over
to
and
the
say,
information. Right.
Yeah, what's going on? Oh, yeah. Maybe it would help if you knew. Yeah, that would help. why would you not want us talking to each other? Anyway, so I like them both. I think the actor's job, you know, I used to say to students when I taught, you know, it's like I'm a shoemaker. Sometimes I make, you know, shoes for JCPenney. Sometimes I make gorgeous shoes for Gucci. And sometimes I make one of a kind magnificent. Your job is to marry craft with art whenever possible and to provide, you know, the skills that are required. Mm. I've jumped around a lot. So
no, that's fine. I don't mind that at all. This is, it's more free form. I want to ask you about another comedy show that you did, because it's another one that has a news story that comes out of it, is My Sister Sam. You played Crazy Sid, which is great. Oh. I mean, I imagine that you were influenced by Crazy Eddie.
Yes, in New York, right? New York.
Yes, I mean, you'd have to be in New York to know, even know what that means. But what was your experience like there? And then, of course, you know, that tragedy that comes out of that with Rebecca Schaefer, that like that's such a horrible, horrible story. And it seemed like she was just, you know, getting going, you know, young, very young girl.
I didn't know her very well. I only worked with her that one time. My friend Joel Brooks was on that show. He's a really great actor, funny and sweet. Pam. That was a very, very good experience. That was a show that was very well run. You know, the Italians, the mob has a thing, a fish stinks from the head. You know, if the people in charge are sweet and kind, organized and creative, then it flows down. If the people in charge are insecure, nervous, making a problem, it is a problem everywhere you go. I remember reading about Rebecca Schaefer, and in fact, I was on the Screen Actors Guild Board of Directors for 3 years, from 90 through 93, I guess, 89 through 92 or 93, and we changed the rules of how much information it has access, is allowed to be accessed by the general public. You know, oh, why shouldn't you have all your phone number and address on, I guess the internet wasn't even that big at that time.
Right.
But enough that some lunatic could, you know, look, if you're a lunatic, you can get shit done and create havoc.
We've seen that, you know, John Lennon is an example.
Oh my God. Exactly.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This was such a tragedy. And I believe that I believe it's called the Rebecca Schaefer Law, which shields the actors or celebrities' information from the general public. And I think, you know, you see someone who's that young, beautiful, talented, and you know, her life has ended by
psychotic. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's a mental illness. It's
for sure. Yeah.
And guns, too many guns.
Can I that as well? Yeah, obviously. Yeah. I want to ask you too. In the 90s, you do Life Goes On, and you become, I think you've done a few of, you did a few of those.
I did. I played Bill Smitrovich, another great actor, and a wonderful guy. We got to be friends. I loved doing Life Goes On. Again, Patti LuPone, who's maybe one of the legendary stage actors. But Michael Nankin wrote this character of mine. And I recurred as one of Bill Smitrovich's character's friends. And man, I absolutely thank him from the bottom of my heart. What I found out, I guess I can say this, it's common knowledge, when a writer creates a character who recurs, the writer gets a royalty.
As character well as payment, that. Right.
I didn't know that till that moment. So I thought, oh, keep going, Michael, write me in overnight.
Write me as much as you want, right.
Please God, you know. And it's interesting, you know, and it was great. It was great fun. Phil Rosenthal was the exec. And was it Phil Rosenthal? Is that his name? I think so. I went to a hockey scholarship at Harvard, which I thought was, I didn't know they had such a thing. It was brilliant. Anyway, he was, it's interesting because when you come together, especially an hour show, half hours a week. And so you come in and you're on the stage, studio set. It's a prescribed place. We all there and then we go away. When you're doing hour television and you're on location and you go here, you go there, it takes a little longer. It can take up to 10 days or a film where it could take, you know, over several weeks or months. It's what a friend of mine used to call the migrant film workers, not to denigrate the work of what the people who harvest our food, but you know, you come together for these very intense times, yet, you know, you exchange intimate information because your actors tend to be kind of open in most cases, and you get to be very close, and then boom, you disappear and go off, and then you may come back. Mm-hmm. And then you, and then you can pick up or not, and then sometimes you never see them again. So in the case of someone like Bill Smitrovich or people I've worked with, where he was kind enough to come out to Topanga, where I've worked for many years at the Will Gears Theatricum Botanicum, and he came to see some shows, and we've stayed in touch over the years. That recurring theme of how we come together and how we go apart is the life of the guest star.
Totally. I want to ask you about 90210. I know fans of this of my podcast know 90210. I know what you did on 90210. You came in as the. It's interesting because like you were playing a director, or you know, in this universe of 90210, which is great. So, tell me about working on that set.
I love that. Chuck Rosen, Charles Rosen, and his wife
Karen.
Karen were writing at the time. Chuck and I got to be friends through a mutual friend. And we haven't seen each other in a while. I have nothing but the fondest regards for him and his talent and his kindness. That was a job that he offered me. And as an actor, when you get an offer, that's a big deal. And I was always grateful for that. He ran a great set. Again, these were young people from my experience who were very grateful for the job they had, for how good the writing was, for how well run and well tuned that experience was for all of them and for me when I came in. Amy Hill played the assistant director on that episode. She's gone on to great, great stuff. She's now on the new Hawaii 5-0. Mm. So I think she's having fun in Hawaii. And I know Amy was friends with Karen Greenrosen as well. So, you know, when you're lucky enough to have someone like Chuck Rosen offer you a job and you're able to deliver, it's really a layers of gratitude. And those kids were amazing. And of course, you know, they're young. When I was on the board of directors at Screen Actors Guild, I got to know Gabrielle Cateras, who became one of our president, and I got to know some of the other actors like Melissa Gilbert.
Sure.
And they were very involved in the Young Performers Caucus because, you know, there are laws to protect the income and the health and safety of young performers. Mm. But there are no real way to shield a lot of them from the emotional angst, weight of fame and fortune.
And at that time in the 90s, you know, they were on TV all the time. I mean, they were being talked about on, you know, this current affair and Bill O'Reilly's old show and all that stuff. I mean, they were fodder for the news, and you know, at a very young age, it must be a lot to deal with, I would imagine.
And hugely popular, right? Correct. I mean, titanic popularity.
Beatles, the Beatles. You know what I mean?
Yes, like, no, exactly. So yeah. Beautiful, talented, and you know, a lot of them have survived it and done very well. And you know, I say bravo, because that it's just, yeah, I don't even know what that would be like. Mm. I know that my ego, you know, I'm not pretty, so I never had to worry about that. But, you know, I just know that my ego when I was younger, I mean, I would have been possibly just a fucking lunatic. You know?
Sure, I'm sure.
People around you to keep you in your place, remind you of who you are.
I mean, you start doing some like Law and Orders and... All of the Murphy Brown, you know, some of the legal stuff starts to come into your.
Oh my God, right.
Tell me about doing that, because it's a shift, but I'm sure maybe for an actor it's a welcome shift from the comedy stuff, right? Isn't it?
Oh yeah.
To break up this, you know, I don't want to always be the funny guy. I want to come on and show that I you know, I'm an actor. I have a range. You know, yeah.
There's a wonderful story about Avery Schreiber. I don't know if you remember who he was. He was. At one point, he was the face of Toritos or Doritos.
Okay.
Big mustache.
Yes. Okay.
I think he's gone, but he was a terrific actor and a really sweet guy. And he want, you know, he shaved his mustache and lost a lot of weight. He wanted to do serious work. And the story goes that his agent said, "What the fuck, man? Where's the guy?
What happened here?" Right.
Because you become a commodity.
Sure.
So yeah, for me, the diversity of being able to do half hour film television, that's the goal. I mean, without being pretentious, I mean, John Lithgow always in my mind was one of the models of, you know, watch him go from film, television, theater, comedy, serious work. You know, this is like, wow, that's, you know, I think the Brits do it better because London is the center of film, television and theater. It's one of the reasons why I've maintained doing theater. Was because I get to do Shakespeare and Moliere and a whole range of different things. And then it keeps my chops up as an actor to do film and television. So yeah, I welcome it. I hope for it. Law and Order I did when I was in New York doing Laughter on the 23rd Floor. I started as a Neil Simon, directed by Jerry Zaks, starring Nathan Lane and J.K. Simmons, who's gone on to fantastic fame and success. Great actor. So inventive. Slattery, John Slattery, also a great actor, who's also gone on to great fame and success on Mad Men and that. I did a Law and Order when I was there in New York, and I was so happy to get to do it. And, you know, I babble on too much, Pete. I'm sorry.
I don't mind. No, this is all the stuff that I love. But yeah.
You know, I was listening to I guess it was a podcast or an interview with Alec Baldwin. And he said, you know, for television, I mean, what am I going to play the judges? You know, he's used to being the leading man, so he wants to be the center of the show. I hope to play the judges. I'm not a leading man. I'm a character actor. I mean, I'm happy somebody writes a romantic interest for me. That would be great. But you know, judges are a place where I'm happy to be for a while. As long as there's opportunity. I've been very lucky in the last few years. I did a couple of episodes of Space Force with Steve Carell. And
good stuff.
I've gotten to do, you know, since the pandemic, I've gotten to do two great projects, one of which is ongoing. I'm glad to be still asked to come to the table, because a lot of older actors, you know, you don't get the opportunity.
Is it challenging as an actor coming in for 10 days and getting the finding the character, you know, of this person? I'm sure it's better when you're coming in for 4 or 5 or 6 episodes, you know, right. But you're in for 10 days and now you have to find this character. Tell me about the process.
Well, the process is like with theater, it's in the script, it's in the material, what's written. I mean, I'll try to bring my experience to what I read, but I have always been trained and pride myself on, and I hope it's true, that I try to be true to what is written. That's why I was saying when I did Heroes and the writers were there on the floor and you could go to them and say, what is this? So that I can get insight from them. It's hard. You have to bring your game. You have to, you know, and you're the guest. So, you know, you can't, I'd like another one. I'd like another take.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure you would, but we got to move on, dude.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
You have one episode, you have one scene, and we've got to shoot, you know, 40 hours worth of material. And I pride myself on being able to deliver in one or two takes. I mean, that's a real, and I've been helped by, I did an episode of Law and Order when it was resurrected, not Law and Order, I'm sorry, L.A. Law.
Yes.
It was resurrected for six great people involved. And I did an episode where I fire my lawyer and I cross-examine myself on the witness stand. And Oz Scott was directing, and he's directed me a number of times. He's just brilliant. And I was struggling, you know, with what the character and how to, you know, cross-examine myself and what exactly to do, and was I being honest? And, you know, and I remember doing a whole long take, and they said, cut. And from way across the soundstage, I'm looking at Oz Scott, and he's going, and I thought, oh, my God. And he walks over and says, dude, it's just not, you're not, he didn't say you're not real, but he said, you know, it's not where it needs to be. And did it again, and he'd be like, do it again, and then he'd give me some, he gave me some insight and some direction that was really helpful. And then a couple of takes in, he said, print it. And I knew that I had achieved something, I had accomplished something in what I think of as the best way, collaboratively. The director, here's the writer, writes something that I think is really good, the actor comes in with an idea, the director has the 10,000 foot view, and you work together to create a performance. And I was so proud of that that episode and the work that we did on that.
That's really awesome, man. That's the kind of stuff I was, you know, I love hearing about. A couple of shows that I know fans will love to hear about too was Sabrina the Teenage Witch and Felicity. You did both of those shows, right?
I love those. So listen, I love what I do. When I'm on a set, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so happy to be here. The relationship between the director and the DP, it's just so. I will say Felicity, the director, Larry Trilling, who's one of the writers and directors. I think he did a bunch of them. I think he was one of the execs. I had done his master's film called Dinner and Driving. He's given me a bunch of work over time, and I played Greg Grunberg's father.
Because on Heroes as well, right?
Well. So I felt really at home on Felicity because I know Larry, and he's a really good director. And he's really insightful. He really likes actors. He really wants to help. He trusts you, and then he gives you, you know, it's like pinball, you know, kind of bump you this way or that way to get you into the where he wants, where he thinks it should be. And that was really, really fun. And Sabrina, you know, I'd never seen the show, and I had a great time. I have to say that, oh God, it's just terrible. My memory for names is not what it used to be, but I just met a lot of, one of the joys of guest star is who you meet in the audition room, the other guest stars. And, you know, I met some incredibly talented, interesting, wonderful actors auditioning for Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And I am not a snob, you know, it's like, I had friends going, what the fuck, why are you? And I said, dude, it's work. It's work as an actor. It's an interesting story. It has a big fan base. It's nothing ever to look down on. It's something to figure out how to create more of.
Mm.
So I really enjoyed that time. I would say that she was struggling to figure out how to be a grown woman. And she started out as a teenager. I'm not analyzing her or
casting
aspersions. She was terrific. But I don't, you know, she didn't want to be seen as a, my experience of her on the set was she didn't want to be seen as a child. She wanted to be seen as a young woman, which is what she had become over time. She carried the show with a professional and a dignified way. But in, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm not going to answer that. I apologize.
You're good.
Mm-hmm. Not my agent, so it doesn't matter. So that was fun, and Felicity was really fun because working, you know, when you work with somebody who you know, I worked with Larry Trilling, the director, and Greg,
You and Greg are great together, by the way. I mean,
I love him, but he just wrote on something, I miss my TV dad, and I miss him a lot. I would love to work with him again. Anybody out there who's listening,
exactly,
write a role for me and Greg Grunberg. I just think he's so giving. He's so funny. He's so deep in terms of his emotion because he's connected to real life through his family and he's just great. We had, so when you're on a set like that, oh my God, you know, I did Mad Men, which was similar. Yeah. I had worked with John Slattery on a stage. And so you go on a set, you've got this huge machine with dozens of actors. And here I have a guide, a friend. John's like, oh, Alan, oh my God, how are you? How's the kid? Blah, blah. And, you know, because I knew him before he was married, and now he's a dad, and we could get to catch up. But it gives you entree into the world. So you're not just another schlub that they brought in, you know what I mean?
Right. And yeah.
Again, as I said, it depends on how kind and inviting the cast and crew are, you know.
I mean, I wanted to ask you, we talked about the positive experiences. Have there been experiences where you were like, I'm just going to go to my trailer. I don't want to be involved in this.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can count on one hand the experiences where there was so much hostility or tension between, you know. Well, I worked on Martin, and I did two episodes. His wife on the show was his wife in real life, and they were having a divorce. He would not come onto the lot until she had driven off the lot, and they had scenes together. So, you know, I'm not judging who he is. Seemed great. It's funny. It was perfectly fine because there was another guest star that I could. But man, there was so much. There was like, I don't know what's going on here, but I hope it's not me. And I had the same experience. I'm allowed to say this, I guess. So when I was doing Shameless, which I had a lot of fun, and I found out that the actor I was working with was really uncomfortable doing some of the stuff that was being asked of him. And I was thinking, God, this guy just won't fucking talk to me. I did what I did, which is I hang out at the craft services table, which my cardiologist wishes I wouldn't do. And then someone explained, oh, listen, there's a whole thing going on.
But how do you navigate that? How do you navigate that, man? Like, that's got to be so challenging.
Yeah, you keep to yourself. You know, what's my lane? You know, I'm here for a day, 2 days, 3 days. I just read a thing. Don't judge someone's story based on the chapter you've walked in on.
Fair. That's great.
Right. Everyone is going through something you don't know anything about. Now, I'm a yenta and a gossip, and sure. I want to be involved. So I was like, yeah. Well, what's going on? Tell me what. Yeah,
exactly.
What's your darkest truth? What are you afraid of? You know, sometimes you get there, but a lot of times just shut the fuck up, and go to your trailer, and have another one of these fabulous things that they offer on the craft service. Now, craft service is different.
Sure.
Everything has to be pre-made, which is just as well for someone like me who struggles with weight. So
yeah. I mean, the work is incredible, man, that you go on to do. You mentioned Mad Men. That was incredible. But even something like Arrested Development, where you play the barber. God. So much talent on set. You're cutting Ron Howard's hair. So
Yeah. Jason Bateman, I did his first show called It's Your Move. He was 15. I'd worked with his daughter, his sister, Justine, on Family Ties.
Yes.
I don't know him. I don't know them. I had experiences with them. So I'm on the set with Jason Bateman, who I think is spectacular and undervalued, although maybe he's not. I mean, I think he does a lot, comedy, series. And Ron Howard, I mean, come on. What are you kidding me? Ron Howard, I grew up, the Andy Griffith Show was like, sure. Oh my God.
Yeah. Happy days, all of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I was thinner, but I don't look anything like that wonderful actor who played Floyd. And I did everything I could to honor the memory of that actor through my performance. I had a small a bit on there, but Allison Jones, the casting director, who I've known for many years, 20, 25, 30 years, who does all of Judd Apatow's movies, and she did Arrested Development, she did Larry David's show, She's fantastic. She's been kind and supportive of me. She's brought me in on everything. I mean, she said, Alan, I have this job that I think is right for you. I said, I'm in. Don't worry about money, billing, whatever you want me to. I made a mistake once years ago. She probably doesn't remember, so she's probably not saying anything, but she brought me in for Benson. And I thought I was wrong for the character. And like a schmuck, I went up to her and I said, you know, it's really nice of you, but I don't think I'm right for this at all. And she said, would I have brought you in if you weren't right for it?
Ooh, right.
And I realized that shut the fuck up, dude.
Just go do Benson.
Why am I still? Yeah. My wife has said to me years ago, your mouth is going to get you in trouble. Shut the fuck up. Just don't offer it, you know.
Right.
Anyway, so yeah.
That's great, man. And you're still working, right? I mean, tell me that you were just in a theater thing out by me here in Pasadena, right?
Yeah, I have to say I did an Amazon show. I did a production of Christmas Carol in December. First time back on stage in 2 years with the same. I'm a resident artist at A Noise Within in Pasadena. It's a great company. And I've been with them for years. My first show with them was 99. We were the last show to survive during the pandemic. Unfortunately, a number of people came down with COVID afterwards. But and I'm going to do another show with them in the spring, a production of Metamorphosis by Mary Zimmerman, who's a resident at Chicago's Looking Glass Theater. It's an adaptation of Ovid's Metamorphosis, very theatrical, and Julia Rodriguez Elliott, who's one of the co-directors at Noise Within, is going to direct. She's fantastically talented and inventive. But I did an episode of a show, my first show back in almost 2 years, year and a three quarters, the first day of shooting on the new Amazon lot right here in Culver City. And I don't think I'm allowed to say what it was, but I did a couple of episodes of it. And man, having come back from almost 2 years of not working, and then I'm shooting another show, I guess I'm not allowed to say, for FX, Fox for FX, I think Disney is producing anyway. So yeah, I'm still.
It's amazing.
Yeah, during the pandemic, my wife and I get along very well, thank God. And we go for walks around the neighborhood, and I would scream, I'm not retired. I'm not done yet.
You still got more. Yeah.
I hope so.
What is it that most people do you find recognize you from? What show is it, or movie, or whatever? Is it that you.
It used to be Heroes. Heroes. For a while, it was Brooklyn Bridge, which was Gary David Goldberg, which was one of my favorite things ever. Nowadays, it's tricky. Nowadays, it's like someone will, I taught at Pomona College for 10 years. I don't teach there anymore. But when I showed the kids my resume, they'd be like, oh, my God, you did Jackson Daxter. You did Fallout 4. Yeah, I did. I've never played a video game. I'm not ashamed or
no, right. That. Sure. It's a wonderful genre.
The stuff my kids play, my kids, my 42 and 40 year old son, play video, or they don't play anymore. But although my older son just bought a Nintendo for his daughters, my granddaughters, and they've been playing, you know, all these old school Nintendo games, Frogger and I've been crazy to see it again. Nowadays, I get a thing very often where people go like, "What? You seem very familiar." And depending on the mood I'm in, you ever see Soap Dish where they take her to a mall in New Jersey just yes. so you can recognize her? Depending on the mood I'm in, if I want, I say, well, you probably see me on television. and if I'm in not that mood, I'll say, no, I just, whatever. But it's hard to know now.
I work at the Target, right?
Right, exactly. I was in prison for a while. You probably saw my face. but it depends on the age group, your cohort, people who saw the half hour television, they'll recognize me from Golden Girls, which has been playing a lot, which I just have such a warm place in my heart for what that was. We talked about the writing and the performance. As long as people still like to see my face show up in their house, I'm happy.
Last thing I want to ask you about is, coming onto these magical sets, for somebody, I know that when you're a guest star and you're working so often at times, it becomes normal, right? Like you see, you walk onto the set of Cheers but at that time, when you're walking onto all of these sets, is there still any part of you that's like, there's the bar at Cheers, or there's the house, or there's the thing. Do you find yourself still in love with the process and seeing the things that maybe a fan would go in, like a huge fan of Cheers would go see the set and be like, oh my God, this is the theater. Did you find yourself feeling like that?
Every single time. Mm. Driving onto the Paramount lot, driving onto what is now the Amazon lot, which was Culver Studios. That's where I just was. Driving on to the Fox lot, where I did a table read for this new show that I'm going to do. Just getting on the lot, walking along the Mary Tyler Moore lot on Radford in the Valley, you know, just walking along, it's just like I get flooded by the memories of what I was been invited to be part of. And I'm just filled with joy at I know it sounds like bullshit, but the opportunity to do this again. I mean, I just fucking, I love it. Yeah, man. And I think any actor who doesn't should probably step aside and let those of us who do, you know, I mean, I think it's just a privilege. I'm a storyteller, as you could tell by my blabbing on and on.
Love it.
These electronic mediums through which we get to tell our stories are reach so many people. The theater where, you know, my wife and I, when we got married, we've been together 48 years. So
incredible.
It's great. I'm so grateful. For our honeymoon, we went to the opening of the high school musical in Fort Bragg. Whenever we go to London, and we've been lucky, right, whenever we go, like I'm a fucking jet setter, but we've gone a couple of times. 2 years ago, we see 8 plays in 6 days. And anytime I pass a honey wagon where actors are housed while you're shooting, I'm always like, you forgot to cast me, because I just want to be part of the show. I just love it. And I think I bring something to it that's of value.
I think what's interesting is that you bring this, I don't know if it's your, I feel like us New York, New Jerseyers East Coasters bring a certain authenticity. We've been through some stuff, right? And I think what you brought to your work is an authenticity in all of the characters that you've played. It's there's a truth and something really beautiful in all the things that you've done that I've seen you in, and probably the things I haven't seen you in. So
that is the kindest thing I've anyone's ever said to me about my work. Stage, you get feedback right away. Film and television, you do it and it's out in the ether. I hope I bring that, and if that's true, I'm grateful that you see it. And
I mean, like, you know, even just thinking about your Golden Girls episode when you played the plumber, which is, it's a comedy, so, you know, but there is something about it that is like, this is truth. This is this plumber. This guy works. He works at the Three's Company House too. You know what I mean? Like he works in town. Like there's something really beautiful about your work, man. And
you know, Will McKenzie, who I think is retired now, living in Florida, a great director all through the 80s. I worked with him dozens of times. What a great guy and a great director, really kind, funny, inventive. He said for an audition that I did for, I don't remember what, Valerie's Family or something. Mm. He said, you're always so honest and real. You always make it real. And I said, dude, isn't that my job? But if that's true, I'm grateful.
It's amazing, man. Well, thank you for your time here. This has been awesome to talk with you. You've done so much great work. And thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure.
Awesome.